Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, welcome. This is Donna Sebo, and I'm so delighted you're able to join me today. And those of you that listen to the show regularly are aware that I don't typically get into the political arena, and I figure there's a lot of people talking about that. But today we have a very special pair of guests. Kathleen Kinsolving is the daughter of Les Kinsolving, who was given the name of Gadfly. Now, this is a book about his life. Sam Donaldson wrote the foreword to this book. Today, we're embroiled in so much media coverage that, in my personal estimation, and this is my 5 cents worth of wisdom, I think it doesn't encourage people to think very much. And I don't know that investigative reporting is something that is done well today. And Les may correct me on this, but this is a man that walked the walk of daring to challenge people on whatever area he felt they were not representing honestly. So I want to welcome to the show Les Kinsolving, who is reputably known as a White House watchdog. At this time, he is retired, but his daughter, Kathleen Kinsolving, I want to welcome both of you to the show.
Well, thank you, Don. It's great to be on.
And I want to say I'm not retired. I'm still the talk show host.
Oh, that's great to know. When is your show? When are you on so people can find out about it?
From 9 until 11 each night, each weeknight.
But you're retired from the White House because Jay Carney, the press secretary, refuses to call on you. What was the last question that you asked Jay Carney?
Well, a great friend of mine who is the senior correspondent, Connie Long, asked, how does the president, does he regard Jerusalem or Tel Aviv as the capital? Does he believe that our embassy should remain in Tel Aviv rather than being in Jerusalem, which is the capital city of Israel? And Carney just tried to evade, and he kept evading. And that really infuriated me, and so I began to needle him. And it was picked up by thousands of people. And from then on,
it went all over the Internet.
Yeah, it went all over the Internet, and it's an outrage that we have our embassy in Tel Aviv. What if Israel moved its embassy to Philadelphia?
Mm-hmm.
And
you're a man that definitely was not afraid to step up to challenge people, but you seem to come out of the, what you would say, the baby box, with that kind of an attitude anyway. You were always a questioning soul, weren't you, Les?
Well, to a certain extent.
I've
always wanted to ask questions, and when he just refused to allow me to ask any questions for the last 2.5 months of Obama's first term, when Obama was reelected, I just decided that's enough, and so I don't cover the White House anymore.
Mm-hmm. And there was one time where you were standing on the sidelines, and you had a fainting spell, and you fell down, and Jay Carney did take your question that day. So at least he had a heart there. But
yes.
Wow.
He did.
Yeah. Now, Les, you were familiar with so many things in your life, so many different challenges. You were Episcopalian. You were a man of the cloth, as so many people would like to say. And you ended up leaving that behind. Give us a little background on what enabled you to determine that you really wanted to be in media and you wanted to be a journalistic investigator.
Well, when I was a rector of an Episcopal church in Pasco, Washington, I inherited one of these parish bulletins, and it was dull as ditch water. So I tried to spice it up, and we had a lot of fun doing that. And
They called it.
It
was
up
the
circulation crew. in 21 states, paid circulation.
The title was the Crucifer, and they ended up. People would call it the Crucifier.
Yes.
That would have these very controversial editorials in the bulletin.
Well, one of the things that you did, and this was back in the 50s, I believe, Les, you decided to really be open about hypocrisy and deceit within the clergy. Now, this is something that had hit the headlines quite frequently in the past, oh, I'd say 15, 20 years. More and more has been coming out about that with different organizations. But you really were, your feet were held to the fire on that one, and it seemed like you were wanting to find the truth. That was really the motivation behind your reporting.
Well, it was. I mean, you try to seek the truth, come whence it may, cost what it will.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what I was trying to do. And there were lots of criticism, of course, and there were people that denounced me. And but that's the way it goes with almost anyone who stands for anything.
Yeah, Dad was a real mover and shaker in the church.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, a fellow clergyman said, "You're the gadfly that this old Episcopal church really needs."
A gadfly.
And I've always been blessed by the recognition that the gadfly was divinely inspired, according to Greek mythology. And the gadfly was, the story of it is that Zeus and Hera, Zeus was the king of the gods, and Hera was his queen. And Zeus was seducing a young, a lovely young lady, and he turned
got
her
very
into
jealous.
A cow. He turned her into a cow, so she could get away. But Hera was very clever and came up with the gadfly, which buzzed in this cow's ear. And it went all the way out of Greece, through Turkey and to Asia Minor, and down to Egypt, where it was deified.
Well, you know, I'm just reading from the book.
I'm honored to be called a gadfly.
Yeah, and I think a great quote by Socrates, when he was on trial for his life. He said, if you kill a man like me, you will injure yourselves more than you will injure me, because his role was that of a gadfly, which was to sting people and whip them into a fury, all in the service of truth.
Wow. Every generation needs gadflies. And I think
today's
world, we need a bucket load. But one of the things that I wanted to cover, which was very, very significant, is Jim Jones. This was a case, even today, of someone that was literally insane in my book, and what he did to hundreds of people, murdering them, and under the auspices of just some incredible, incredible cover, you really went after him. What was it that caught your attention about Jim Jones that made you decide, Les, that this was something you really had to sink your teeth into?
Well, I just had watched. I went up. I got a tip from a wonderful lady reporter from the Indianapolis Star, Carolyn Pickering. And we went up to Ukiah, where he had this church that had a swimming pool right in the center of the church gathering. And we covered him, and I met him. It's the only time I ever met him, and he was very complimentary. But as I remember going, we stayed for about an hour and a half, and after in the third half hour, my photographer came up and said, "Les, can we get out of here?" And I said, "Well, please, let's talk later, but we've got to get out of here." And I said, "All right." And so we did. And when we got in the car and we got away along down the ways, he said, did you remember that great big guy that welcomed us?" And I said, "Yeah, a great big fellow with he was wearing a church vestment." And he said, I've got a photograph here that I'll show you when we can get it developed." He was packing a .357 Magnum.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Yeah, the ushers wore guns and holsters. And
yeah,
there's a photo that was published in the Indianapolis Star. You know, Carolyn Pickering and Dad were collaborating on an expose of Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And the interesting thing is Dad went after him. And they, by the fourth article, Dad had written eight. By the fourth article, they put a picket line in front of the Examiner, and they also broke into our home and took copies of Dad's check stubs and also future columns to harass him. We found out later
had copies of the columns they stole. And they put, it was the biggest picket line they'd had since Harry Bridges in 1936. And I one of my editors, Tom Eastham, said, "What are you waiting for? Aren't you going to go out and greet your fans?" So I went out, and they got a picture, the San Francisco Chronicle, where I had worked until I went to the Examiner. They had a television station. And this television station got a close-up of me, and they froze me with my mouth wide open.
And you had a high-pitched
shriek.
The Chronicle, the TV station was owned by the Chronicle.
And they put that on the air, and then followed it up with an interview of Jim Jones with no such distortion. For which I will never forgive the San Francisco Chronicle.
They were mad that the Examiner had scooped them.
Uh-huh.
They were getting back at Dad, and they just did this ridiculous, outrageous, footage of Dad. And then they cut right to Jones, and he, like you said, Dad, he looked like the Archangel Gabriel.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So,
so
we have the same.
Yes. Really,
we
crazy
have the same problem today.
Yeah. It's just. You know, journalism hasn't quite changed. People just
complain about it.
No,
not really.
Yeah.
Les, you said there's considerable similarity in covering religion and politics because religious leaders are all astute politicians. Boy, do I agree with that one. Now,
oh, yes.
You found out
they
that just,
they just
on murdering
they are able to cover it up pretty well. And
mm-hmm.
I've covered both secular politicians as well as ecclesiastical politicians.
Now, they had planned on murdering you. You found out about that.
Yeah.
The Jim Jones?
I was number two on the hit list.
Number two. Yeah, and that's the tragedy is so well known. I'm not going to go into much detail on that, but fortunately took himself out. Sadly, he took a lot of innocent people, a lot of children.
The thing that is so outrageous is that there were so many politicians, including a young Mr. Brown, who put up with Jones and supported him.
Mm-hmm.
And also Harvey Milk. Harvey mm-hmm. Milk was an ardent supporter. He knew they were trouble, but he needed their help, the volunteers of the temple.
Well, it was the money.
Jones, he spread money, and they had tons of volunteers, so all these corrupt politicians used them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's an
old
story.
And it was also hush money.
Now, Les, you were on Nixon's list. There was a hit list that President Nixon put together. You were on that one. You were really liked by them, I could tell. I mean,
well,
they went after you.
Well, I know, but I wasn't way up on that list because I was a smaller media. But I was representing a number of different newspapers. I mean, I was syndicated across the country to about 240 papers.
Now,
yeah, you actually were totaled up to about 309 at one point. And Abe Mellencamp, yeah, who was a Chronicle editor, he didn't like Dad because he was jealous of that, because his paper wasn't syndicated, you know, and that his column wasn't syndicated.
It went to six, and I was in 300, and so he was one of the nastiest editors I ever had, and he's gone now. So, but he just at first he was very 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 affable. But when I got that many, I was syndicated in that many papers, he was very jealous because he was only in six. And it just led to all kinds of problems.
Yeah, but you loved Scott Newhall, your editor, and also Gordon Tate.
Scott Newhall was one of the most tremendous people I ever met, and he came to my defense a number of times, and I will always be grateful to him. And I think the best editor I ever had was Gordon Pates. Both of them are no longer alive, but Gordon Pates was the managing editor of the Chronicle.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, when I went to the Examiner, I missed him very much.
Yeah, and you know, Tom Eastham was the one who got Dad involved into the Temple story, the Jim Jones expose. And then when I called him 20 years later, because I was writing up the story about Dad, he said, well, I really wasn't that involved. He denied it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, of course, that you could expect that, and I'm just sorry. I think they were all embarrassed.
Yeah.
I think,
yeah, in fact, Tom Eastham, right after the massacre,
I went to so many newspapers asking that they start investigating, but the Los Angeles Times and other papers, they just wouldn't, not one of them. And
mm-hmm.
I had about 30 papers that I went to and asked them, please, please, just if you don't believe me, send your own reporter. Not one of them did it,
mm-hmm.
with the one exception of the. It was a paper in northern, California,
Santa Rosa Press Democrat.
Yeah, the Santa Rosa Press Democrat had. They were wonderful,
mm-hmm.
and they were the only paper. The rest of them didn't do it, and as a result, more than 900 people died at the hands of this maniac.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And
now,
it could have been avoided.
Yep.
Kathleen, when you were putting together your dad's stories, and of course he's got a plethora of them, you probably could have had 45 volumes of books because of
all
of the different experiences. How were you able to put together The Gadfly, The Life and Times of Your Dad, Les Kinsolving, in such a comprehensive way? Did you sit your dad, Les, down and say, okay, Dad, we're going to go down memory lane? How were you able to put this together? Because I know of people that try to get family members to tell their stories, because everybody has them. And your dad has led an exceptional life, especially being at the White House. Mm-hmm. How did you manage to put all this together?
Well, you know, I want to thank my brother, Tom Consolving, my older brother. He's actually taught me the craft of writing, you know, journalistic, you know, article. And he sat Dad down and recorded. He interviewed him. He handed over about, I think, five or six tapes. And so I, you know, of course, transcribed those. So I started with that. And, you know, I went to NYU and I studied screenwriting. And screenwriting could be very helpful in how to shape a story. So I kind of put it kind of a three-act structure where I started with Dad's early life. And then act two was, you know, he becoming, going from the ministry into journalism. And then, of course, act three would be his infamous talk show career. So I kind of broke it up in three parts.
Which is still going on today, his career.
Yes,
just
he's still
very
going
effective
strong.
Today.
You know, he'll get up to 20 calls a night, you know, on his show. I mean, he's a legend in Baltimore. In fact, I want to say that when we were promoting the book, when it came out in May of 2010, we went to the 4th of July parades in Maryland. I went to four of them with him, and I stood up with him in this limousine, and we're all waving to the crowds, and I just held up, you know, the book, and that was certainly some good promotion there. But I got to say, by the fourth parade, I mean, people were cheering and screaming and yelling, less, less, less. I mean, it was like Patton entering Sicily. You know, it was incredible. I couldn't. This is my father. I mean, he's like a god to these people. You know, they worship him. You know, so it was
well,
really
there's a number of them
that
don't worship me, to say
well,
the very
true.
Least.
Yes. Now, Les, I want my audience to know how you started getting involved in the White House, because you are such an outspoken, thorough question. Type of individual. In fact, you did, I will call it an expose on drug use in the White House. So when that hit the fan, that was something else. They actually tried to keep you from being able to do interviews. How did you get into that?
Well, I started covering the White House when I moved east. I was covering the White House and Congress and the State Department and the Defense Department. It was a heavy load. But I just found covering the White House with, I've covered under 14 press secretaries, and the one that is in now is one of the most unfair of all the ones I've covered. He just he cut us off, and I finally, after 2 months, where I wasn't allowed to ask any questions, he was focusing on the first two rows of people and giving the people in the back rows just one question apiece, where he let those people in the front row ask 8 and 9 and 10 questions. And that's the way he operates. And when we asked him this question about Jerusalem and Tel Aviv, and he refused to answer, and I went after him, he just cut me off from then on. And I just decided, after 2 months of that, enough is enough. And particularly when the president was reelected, I decided that's about time enough to retire from doing that anymore. I
and
miss
you know,
it,
Dad was
but I was always able to ask questions. All the rest of them were kind enough and decent enough to let me ask questions, but this guy just wouldn't.
Yeah, and Dad was the first reporter at the White House to ask, to bring up the subject of AIDS in 1982 to the Reagan administration. And the reporters laughed at his question when he said, you know, this is known as the gay plague. and everybody laughed, including Larry Speaks, who was Reagan's press secretary. They made a big joke about it. So that was pretty shameful.
Yep.
That's
the way they did it, and I just think it's their everlasting disgrace.
Mm-hmm. Now, Les, you've been described.
AIDS has killed so many millions of people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely true. You've been described as a peppercorn in the federal soup. Now, that gives a visual that I think is quite profound. And I loved the story in your book, Gadfly, how you were picked out. There were 32 questioners that were chosen by choosing jelly beans by President Reagan. I read that and I thought, you've got to be kidding. This is what
I had asked Reagan while he was running for president, would you be willing to allow people in the back rows to ask questions? And he said, well, I just call on them as they go. And I said, would you be willing to allow a drawing? Could we just draw out of a bowl and do it? And he said, yeah, I'll do that. And he did. He did. He fulfilled his promise.
Mm-hmm. He was very good with the press.
Beg pardon?
He was very good with the press. He was fair. You'd raise your hands.
But
and he
right
would
after, right after that, right after he had that drawing, and I was the last one to win on that, and there were some of those regulars just walked out,
mm-hmm.
which tells you something about them. It was something almost unforgettable.
Yeah, I think Leslie Stahl was one of them who walked out.
Leslie Stahl was one of the meanest and nastiest women I've ever met.
Yeah, when Dad was passing out copies of the Washington Weekly, she took it and crumpled it up in front of him. And he and Dad, you said to her, why, Leslie, I thought you could read.
Oh, my goodness. That's a sassy one. Okay. You come by that sassiness, though. I think your mom, I'm going to backstep here, because your mother was very, very quick on her verbal feet. And I loved the story, Les, about your mom and the general who approached her. And at the time,
he
was a young chaplain's wife. And he said, madam, since when is it appropriate for the chaplain's wife to attend divine services without stockings? And, of course, all the guys laughed. And she just looked at him sweetly and said, general, since when is it appropriate for the commanding officer to spend his time during divine services inspecting the chaplain's wife's legs? I thought, okay, you inherited this quite naturally.
Yeah.
And your mom was of that particular era where women had, she reminds me of the
and at West Point, whenever my parents would go to a party, and the superintendent was there, he would see her and then flee. Because he knew if this ever reached the if it ever reached the newspapers, he'd have been finished.
Oh.
It was outrageous what he did, and that staff of his giggling at him. They certainly didn't giggle when she asked that question, so I was very proud of her.
You have a quote that you usually finish your show with, Les. It's humilis, humilibus, inflectans, arrogantibus, which is humble to the humble.
Humilis, humilibus, inflectans, arrogantibus, yeah. That's humble
to
the humble, inflexible to the arrogant.
Ah, I love that. I'd never
That's
heard
of our solving family motto.
Yeah.
Well, it's so true. We hate arrogant people.
This has just been a delight. And Les, how old are you now, if you don't mind my asking?
No, no problem. I'm 85.
Well, you're an inspiration to anyone who's younger, showing that the mind does not need to atrophy. The tongue can stay just as sharp, and the truth needs to be sought out earnestly and spoken about. Give us the information on your radio station so those that are listening in from the East Coast area, or maybe it's even broadcast on the Internet, so they'll know how to hear your show that's on in the evening.
Well, it's you can pick it up on the Internet. It's WCBM in Baltimore. And I'm on from 9 until 11 Eastern Time, Monday through Friday.
I wish you an ongoing career that keeps you right there in the front lines, because Les, you are a man that definitely there needs to be more like you. And I'd ask you just quickly, what would you say to someone that is wanting to be a journalist or yearns to be able to speak about the truth? It's not an easy journey. You have gone through a lot of experiences, and that's where the book Gadfly is so significant. It's about your journey, your personal journey, and Kathleen has done a wonderful job of expressing it. What would you say to a young reporter?
I beg your pardon?
What would you say to an upcoming journalistic reporter?
Well, I would say seek the truth, come whence it may, cost what it will. Tell the truth keep after. There are a lot of people that are very skilled at avoiding the truth, and you have to try to have a sense of humor, as well as an assertiveness to have the courage to continue.
It takes that. It takes courage. It takes guts, whatever term you want to use. And fearlessness is something that is not easy to acquire. But if you really know that what you're doing is the right thing to do and the right information has to be out there, it's very, very important. I'm so grateful to both of you. Les Kensolving, thank you very much. And Kathleen Kensolving, I want to compliment you on how you were able to put together this wonderful story about your father, who is still out there beating the tom-tom, so to speak, trying to let people know the real story. It's a delight having both of you on the show, and I'm so pleased we were able to do this today. Thank you,
Donna.
Again. And our Kathleen, what is the website that
You can certainly get the book on WND.com. That's WorldNetDailyBooks.com. Or you can go to Amazon. They've got copies there, too, Amazon.com.
Wonderful. Gadfly, The Life and Times of Les Kensolving, a White House watchdog. And I guarantee you there's a lot more inside the pages that you just, your eyes will get as big as saucers when you're reading. You're going to just say, wow. This is Donna Sebo.
So.
We are taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. I'm so delighted that you were able to join me today, and phone lines are now open. So if you'd like to call in and chat with me, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Call in to the telephone number 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. All I need is your first name or your initial. And, of course, I'd love to know where you're calling in from. And then after that, just let me tell you what I perceive, and then you can ask me a question about anything that you might have a concern about. I really think that it's so important that one has a chance to talk to people that have had unique backgrounds. And when I think of the journey that Les has gone through, so many of us will have members in our family that when we learn of what they've experienced is, oh, wow, I didn't know that. So sometimes you can start researching in your family people's stories, and I have a girlfriend up in Alaska that has done that. She actually started with her grandmother while she was still alive. This was about 7 or 8 years ago. And she said, I was astonished. I managed to get her to just sit and talk to me. And her grandmother was this petite powerhouse of a woman that had been raised on a farm. And she was in her 90s when she was able to interview her, and she was still very articulate and very sharp. And Mary learned about the way of life that her grandmother had grown up with, which just amazed her. And her grandmother told her about the lifestyle, which basically there weren't even automobiles around at the time that her grandmother was growing up on the farm, not much to speak of. Having a vehicle to get you to and from town was really an expense that most people couldn't afford out in her part of the world. So it was really a big deal. So she learned about the farming practices and how her grandmother had survived through so many things. Well, then she went to her mother, and her mother had a whole different type of story to tell, different scenarios of experience that she had gone through. And my friend has put all of this together in a wonderful, I'll call it a portfolio, and now she's trying to coordinate photographs and all kinds of things. And she spent a few years already doing this. And she said, I have learned so much. She said, it is absolutely amazing the changes that have evolved within just a couple of generations. And she said, I've got my grandchildren, and I want them to know about these wonderful members of the family. She's got two granddaughters, so her granddaughters will one day be able to see actual videos of members of family that are no longer around and hear their stories. It's just incredible. So I always think it's good when we can do something like this and learn about what people have seen and experienced, because it often can empower us if we listen wisely and well. Donna Sebo here, 888-627-6008. People are so innovative, and I find it just so intriguing how someone will come up with an idea that just blossoms and grows up out of what I call a rich soil of, I wonder if we can do this. I wonder if this can be done. And this particular situation had to do with a bridge club in Florida. And there were a group of people, 8 of them, that would get together on a regular basis. And, of course, you have your pot that you put a dollar in. They were really high rollers. They each put in a dollar. And play the game, and they bid, and they do all the things that you do with bridge. And the winner of the game would get $5, and $3 would go to the runner-up. So the $8 were just divvied up just beautifully. However, they decided they were going to change how they did things. They wanted to do something else with the money in the pot. Now, they said a year's worth of winnings added up to just over $200. Someone came up with the idea of, I wonder what we could do with that $200. So the entire group of 8 got interested. Everybody started scouting around. Who could we donate that $200 to? Well, they saw an ad for an organization called Smile Train. This is a charity that helps children with cleft lips and palates in third world countries throughout the world. Now, reconstructive surgeries for a cleft palate take less than 45 minutes and cost $250. Well, the whole group got very excited about that. They pooled their money every other week and added a little bit more to make a difference. They got in touch with the organization Smile Train. Smile Train sent them a photo of a little girl whose surgery that they had funded. They saw the before and after. Well, that was the beginning of a wonderful, wonderful patterning for this group that meets religiously every week playing their game of bridge. And they said, we're going to continue to do this. So this small group of eight people, they are making a difference in the lives of children one at a time, enabling them to go through life one child at a time without the scarring that a cleft palate gives. Interestingly enough, cleft palates are typically caused by malnutrition. And once that nutritional balance in a mother is brought into harmony, the child will develop normally. But this is what they do, and they said, you know what? The bridge game's really even more fun, because we know every dollar we put in that pot is going to make the difference in the life of a child. Donna Sebo here. Give me a call if you would like to chat, 888-627-6008. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about the Kiowa people. Mr. Vetter is going to be my guest. We're going to be talking about a man, a Kiowa, who he had the opportunity to get to know personally. In fact, the man, whose name was Big Bo, he gave to Mr. Vetter a lot of information about the spiritual teachings of his people and how they have had to adapt to a world that was just so very, very different from the one that their people had been in for so many centuries. So we're going to find out about that. Also, we're going to on Thursday be talking with Fred Feldman, how to save the world on $5 a day. My goodness, $5 a day? How in the world can you do that? Well, we'll find out from Fred. And then Coral Holmes is going to be my guest also on Friday. We're going to have an opportunity to chat with her at the bottom of the hour. So the first part of the show is going to be open mic, where you'd be able to call in if you'd like to chat with me then. But we are going to be talking about a legend of the people up in the Aleutian Islands. Now, she's written a novel that is just delightful, so we'll be finding out about that. And there's so many wonderful stories, so many things that are going to be coming up. And we have got a lineup for the next month that is just incredible. And that information will be going up on the show information site right here on BBS. So just know that that detail or the details of the upcoming guests are going to be very, very much right there in front of you, so you can tell your friends what's happening and tune in to what's going on. I wanted to share with you something about vegetables here. And the reason that I want to share it is that vegetables are powerhouses when it comes to nutrients. But so often, we really want something that's simple and easy. How about some roasted vegetables with turmeric? Turmeric is a very, very powerful seasoning agent. And it is also known for its antifungal, antibacterial properties. This is just an incredible component that is for flavoring, delicious, but also in the Eastern cultures, you're going to find that it's especially Indian, East Indian cultures, they love to use it. And it gives this beautiful, beautiful golden tone to whatever it touches. So this is how simple this is. You're going to have an oven preheated to 400 degrees. And these are the vegetables that you're going to want to have in this dish. Of course, you could substitute others if you like, but roasted vegetables are really, really good. You're going to need two fennel bulbs trimmed and quartered, one sweet potato. You want to peel it and cube it, 12 Brussels sprouts. You have those. a large red bell pepper cut into chunks, one medium red onion peeled and quartered, two carrots sliced, two yellow squash sliced. You're going to need about 2 tablespoons of olive oil, 1 teaspoon, that's all you need, of the turmeric, because it really is quite potent, a little bit of sea salt and some black pepper, and the recipe is so easy. Of course, you're going to have to prep your veggies, and then after they're all prepped and cut and ready to go, then you just put them, you have them all in a big bowl, and put your olive oil over it, and just mix them up so the oil gets on all of it. Put them onto baking sheets. Now, you want the vegetables to spread out. You don't want them in a pile. You want them to spread them out evenly. And then you want to, if necessary, if it's a big batch, you can cut this amount of veggies in half, but if it's a big batch, put it on 2 baking sheets, because, again, you want them spread out. And you are going to roast them for about 10 to 15 minutes. Now, you have to watch them, because at that high heat, 400 degrees, they can burn very easily. And all you need to do is remember that the fennel, the sweet potato, and your Brussels sprout might take a little bit longer to roast. So you might want to put them more together so that they are going to cook evenly. And then when it's done, pour it into your serving dish, sprinkle it with a little turmeric, salt, and pepper, and you just are going to find that having this rainbow of colors, and again, you can substitute any other vegetable that you want, but the olive oil just helps to give that little bit of caramelized. It brings the sugars out, like in your onion and your other vegetables, and it just gives that lovely, lovely golden hue to it, especially with the turmeric that you sprinkle on there, and it's tasty, it's flavorful. I like to add a little bit of spice into it, so you might want to experiment with a little bit of cumin or maybe a touch of cayenne. Don't be afraid of your herbs and spices in the kitchen. They do wonderful things. One of my favorites, of course, with my Italian background, it's a good reason that it's one of my favorites, is fennel seed. Fennel, oh, so good. I just love that. But anyway, have fun with it. It's delicious, delightful, it's healthy, and hey, it's going to look beautiful on your table when you serve it. Donna Siebel here. We're taking a break for just a moment. Give me a buzz if you want to chat. 888-627-6008. We'll be right back.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone line is open if you want to give me a buzz at 888-627-6008. All I need is your first name or your initial, and just know, after that, I'll give you what I perceive, and then, you can ask, or I finish, you can ask me about anything that you like. Donna Siebel here, 888-627-6008. Poisons. Well, when we mention that, we usually think of something we put out for rats, or we've got something that's got to kill the bugs out in our yard. But they're actually poisons that we eat. Now, many of us are very much aware of the use of pesticides and that type of thing. But I'm talking, actually, about real food that people eat that is poisonous and They know it. They know it. The puffer fish. Now, this is phenomenally poisonous. And in Japan, there are chefs that go through very, very intense training because you can go into restaurants in Japan and have this poisonous fish. And if it is not prepared correctly, and there are people that die from this every single year, the flesh contains just enough of a poisonous tetrodotoxin. That's right. It's highly poisonous, but you have to know how to fix it correctly. And what it does, it gives the people that are eating it what they call a tingle. Oh, if they get too much of a tingle, they're dead. And it is usually served as sashimi. The toxin of the puffin fish is primarily in the organs, but there is enough in the flesh that if they don't fix it properly, you're dead. The cassava. Now, the cassava is a root vegetable. It comes from Africa and South America. In many cultures, it is the main source of carbohydrates. But guess what? It's got cyanide in it. That's right. The cyanide compounds are in the root of the cassava plant, and they have to go through a very special process of preparation before it can be eaten. I wonder who figured that one out centuries ago. I always want to ask the question, just like the question, whoever ate the first oyster? I haven't a clue. Nutmeg. Guess what? This is a seasoning. This is a spice. I absolutely love it. In baked goods, anything that you fix with vanilla, freshly ground nutmeg is absolutely wonderful. If you buy it already ground and powdered, the difference between taking the fresh nutmeg pod and using the ground that you buy in the store, it's just unbelievably awesome, the difference. However, apparently, this seed pod worldwide, large doses of raw nutmeg, and apparently there's quite a few young people that are experimenting with this. If you take large doses of it, it'll send your nervous system into overdrive and can actually kill you. That's right. As a wonderful flavoring, a little bit goes a long way. Oh, it's awesome. And I love the fragrance of nutmeg. Also, sassafras. Now, how many people know about sassafras today? There used to be the sassafras drink. If you watch any of the old Wild West Westerns, that will be mentioned. It's the drink at the bars, besides the hard liquor. Well, it's been used for who knows how long as a painkiller. That's right. Sassafras in the United States and also in East Asia found that the tree bark was wonderful as an insect repellent and also as a component to provide scent in soaps that were made. Now, they briefly banned it in the United States. However, it's not now. There is a carcinogen that was in it, but they have figured out a way where you don't have to have that carcinogen in whatever you would consume. Now, cheese. How many of you are cheese lovers? Oh, I love good cheese. And of course, good cheese, flavorful cheese, is fermented. Swiss cheese, which goes around the world, and good Swiss cheese, it is awesome. It has a very, very distinct flavor. It goes great with freshly baked bread. You know, great to put it on salads, whatever. It's wonderful. But Swiss cheese can be high in histamines. How does that occur? It occurs because of bacteria that's in the cheese. And dependent on how it is monitored, and of course, cheese is fermented. This is what you're talking about. It's a fermentation process. And then chilies, well, the capsaicin, that's right, that wonderful component that makes the chilies absolutely fiery to the tongue. If you have too much of it, it actually can cause a negative response in the body. And when I read that, I had to laugh because I remember as a little girl, our family had traveled back and forth across the country a few times. We stopped in this one restaurant in New Mexico. I guess I was about 7 or 8 years of age, and I remember sitting in this restaurant. and they served Mexican food, and they had these spicy dishes. Well, in this restaurant, this was real Mexican food, and they had real, real spicy stuff, which even when I was little, I absolutely loved, just like I do today. And what happened is that I saw a woman at another table. Apparently, her system was highly sensitive. She got very red in the face, could hardly, she was just going, huh. And the more water she drank, because she didn't know that if she had milk, that would neutralize it. That's something to keep in your mind. If ever you have something that is so hot that it's just burning you alive, get milk, get yogurt, get cream, ice cream. I don't care what it is, but you need a milk product, and that balances out the fiery stuff. But that's one of my fond memories of watching an adult hyperventilating, I think would be a good term, because she had had too much hot stuff. This is Donna Sebo. I know that we're out of time. I want to share a quote with you before I say goodbye. It says, everyone has influence no matter what your personality type or your career. No matter whether you're rich or poor, married or single, young or old, the question is not whether or not you have influence, but what you will do with the influence you have. Joe Girardi, the New York Yankees manager, that was his quote. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Your mind, your being belongs to you, nobody else. Take pride in who you are and take pride in the fact that you can make a difference. Just like the Group of Eight, getting together every week for their fun time playing bridge, you can do the same thing. You can do it in your own way. Do it today. This is Donna. Join me tomorrow. We're going to be talking about the Kiowa. Tell your friends. I look forward to having you join me again. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.